she begs you to take the train. You know the lady's in love with you.
And if she should sneak a quick look inside your little red book, it means the lady's in love with you.
And if she phones you but doesn't reverse the charges, like all kinds of lady friends often do,
here's just how it stands. You've got romance on your hands, 'cause the lady's in love with you.
If she's allergic to fish, but you say fish, so it's fish, that means the lady's in love with you.
And if she's met your old flames and she remembers their names, that means the lady's in love with you.
And Sunday night when you take her to see the movies, and she says the balcony seats will do, well, sir, here's just how it stands. You've got romance on your hands,
'cause the lady's in love.
Do you mean that the lady's in love?
The lady's in love with you.
Say the 14th?
Yes.
Where are we at? Okay, I'd like to bring this Goleta City Council special meeting to order of June 14, 2022. If you all rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay, if we can have roll call.
Councilmember Richards.
Here.
Councilmember Kiriakou.
Here.
Councilmember Seves.
Here.
Mayor Pro Tempore Kasdan.
Here.
And Mayor Perotti.
I'm here. At this time, we'll have public forum. Anybody that wishes to speak to anything that's not on our agenda today?
If there are any members of the public wishing to speak, please use the raise hand feature and I will call on you. I do not see any responses at this time.
Okay, thank you. Amendments or adjustments to our agenda, City Manager?
Madam Mayor, we have no amendments or adjustments to today's workshop agenda, so we are ready to move forward.
Okay, thank you.
Item A1, Priority Spending Plan Workshop for Enhanced Sales Tax Revenues.
Okay, Ms. Green, you wanna start us off here?
Thank you, Madam Mayor, council members. Mr. Rio and I are going to tag team this presentation, as we often do with our budget workshops. And just as a little bit of background here, this is the last workshop in our months-long budgeting process. It's a little different than what we've done in the past. This is something new that we added so that it could help prepare council and the public in the event that a sales tax measure does get placed on the ballot and if it is approved by the voter. So this isn't something that we usually have at the end of our budget process. But it is a workshop format. As I've explained in the past, our workshops are more informal. We will have a brief slide presentation here. We'd like to get through the slides and then take public comment and then go into focusing on priority spending plan and getting input from council. But if council members have questions as we go, let us know. We're happy to address those questions as they come up. The other thing to note is we do have a fixed end time on this meeting because of some of the other meetings scheduled and things that council members and staff are already committed to doing today. So we are going to go fairly briefly through the slides, but if there's some information you would like us to highlight or questions, like I said, please bring them up. But we are trying to be very sensitive to the time we have today. So you'll see as we go through the slides here that it's a shorter version than what accompanied the staff report that's posted online. It was sent to council and the public. But all those other additional information slides are still there. So we can bring them up if council wants us to. But we did provide a lot of background information that is great to have, but we're not going to focus on it unless asked questions. So with that, we'll get ready and move on to slide 2. And this really just gives a very brief background about why Goleta needs to consider revenue enhancements. And really the most important point is in the third paragraph, where it notes that while city revenues are definitely sufficient for our current service levels for our operations. We have a balanced budget that we've presented to you in workshops and will be going before you next Tuesday for adoption. It's still not enough to achieve many of the goals that are in the council's strategic plan and other management and strategic plans that are more topic specific that we'll talk about later. But also it's not sufficient revenue for us to address all of the critical maintenance needs. And as you know, as a city that inherited many facilities and infrastructure that was aging and in various states of repair and disrepair, there's a lot of investment that still needs to be made in that infrastructure. And then we have capital projects. Some are very urgently needed and health and safety related. Others are large transportation projects, very complicated. And there's really so much on the city's plate that the only way that we'll be able to accomplish all of that is to enhance revenues. So next slide, Mr. Rio. As you'll recall, starting back in 2020, the city started talking about how to supplement revenues. We had lengthy discussions about a potential sales tax measure at that time. Council elected not to go forward for a variety of reasons, but you directed us to bring back an analysis of revenue options. We did that starting first in December of 2020, and then several times over the last couple of years, we've brought this back to you to get input, provide you with the results of consultant analyses that we've undertaken. And at one point earlier this year, we asked you to tell us what potential revenue enhancements did you want us to pursue. And council did direct us to look further into a sales tax measure. And for the reasons we've listed here on this slide and the next, it's important to note that about 44% of that sales tax gets paid by people who don't live in Goleta. So it's a tax that would not be simply levied on residents. It would purchase to anyone who, sorry, it would apply to anyone who purchases retail goods within the city. But keep in mind that there's many things that are exempt from sales tax. So if there were an increase in the tax, it would not mean that costs of food, prescription medicine, medical devices, gas, or items that can be bought with food stamps would be subject to the tax. Those costs would not go up because of a local sales tax. So I think that's important for people to know. It's a familiar type of tax. A lot of people are aware of what sales tax does and how it helps. Next slide, please. And what people probably don't realize is that Goleta is tied for the lowest sales tax rate among the other cities in our county. We have not in the past taken steps to increase it. And then the thing that makes us most unique is that we have revenue sharing with the county through our RNA agreement. Other cities do not have that. So what it means is the county receives a much higher percentage share of the revenue coming out of Goleta than it does for other cities. With a new sales tax, however, that would not be subjected to any revenue sharing. So the proceeds of a new sales tax would go just to the city, would not be shared with the county. And so that means we get to decide exactly how to use that money in the interest of our community, our residents and neighbors here in Goleta. So next slide. I'm going to now ask Mr. Rio to chime in. As you know, we do this back and forth tag teaming, and I wanted him to be able to cover this slide for you.
Thank you, Ms. Green. Mr. Rio.
Okay, thank you. So this slide really just highlights where, first, where do Goleta's property tax go? We just kind of wanted to give a sense of, you know, when the revenues are generated here locally, where do they go? So what this chart is showing is normally what is the core base of a city's revenue is property tax. So as everyone's aware, we do share with the county our, you know, what would normally be our allocated amount. So out of the property tax that's generated or subject to the 1% that's levied on properties, so Goleta receives about a little over 5%. If we did not have revenue neutrality, we would get approximately 10%. But this bar graph here does show the allocation to the different jurisdictions, with school districts getting about 63% of the property tax generated, county fire at almost close to 15%, and then the county getting 11%. Moving on, we thought it was important to show this data set of recent local add-on sales tax measures from the June 2022 election. So this is preliminary data that's provided by California City Finance. So what's this showing is that there was, in the top section here, there was four transaction and use tax, so add-on sales tax for a general tax that was considered for vote from these cities in Torrance, Susanville, Santa Cruz, and Avalon. So three of them did pass. And then there was other specific purpose add-on sales tax that's shown below. So again, this is preliminary information that's put out by California City Finance. Moving on, so this is just a snapshot, a recap of what City Council have seen before with the public opinion surveys and the polling data. So again, just showing that there is consistent support for a potential sales tax increase. And with that, I'm going to turn it back over to our city manager.
Thank you, Mr. Rio. So I wanted to touch quickly on the fact that as we prepared once again to consider a sales tax, we engaged in extensive public opinion polling. And we've shared a couple of slides here that show you in that polling how respondents ranked the priorities that they felt were most important to them. As you see on this, we have the top priorities shown as helping prevent brush fires caused by illegal encampments, protecting creeks and coastal waters from pollution, supporting public safety and 911 response, preventing pollution from entering local creeks and coastal waters, keeping public areas clean and safe, protecting public health and safety, increasing the use of recycled water to irrigate parks and fields, and repairing streets and potholes. We have some more on the next slide. retaining and attracting local businesses and jobs, maintaining open spaces and natural areas, retaining local businesses and jobs, oh, that's shown twice here, keeping parks clean and safe, maintaining open space, protecting Goleta's long-term financial stability, and addressing homelessness. So you'll see that there's kind of some recurring themes here: health, safety, environment. These are things that consistently were ranked extremely important or very important to the respondents. Next slide, please. We also did an informal survey of 600 Goleta residents that really reflects the results of the public opinion polling. So, you know, we're consistently seeing these themes from residents, which I think is wonderful information for the council to have. The public seems very unified in what they consider the most important items to them for the city to address. I'll just go through a few of the top ones. Keeping public areas safe and clean, paving streets, removing potholes, and improving traffic safety, protecting Goleta's long-term financial stability, supporting public safety, maintaining open spaces. So again, even in the informal survey, we're seeing the same themes are being addressed with high levels of support from the community. And we thought it was important to underscore those things for you today, because what we're asking you to do is think about some of our unfunded needs and think about the input you received from the public and to try and help us envision how those priorities could be reflected in the use of additional revenues if a sales tax measure goes to the voters and is approved. But we also wanted to reiterate what's unfunded. I can't stress enough that we have a balanced budget for our current level of operations. So what we're really focusing here on is what are we not able to do that is above and beyond our current service level of operations. We talked to you last week about our capital improvement program and how we have over $100 million in unfunded projects or underfunded projects. We don't have a current net operating revenue that would support financing of all of those projects, for example. So that would be beyond our reach without increasing our revenues. As you know, we do have a pavement rehabilitation program that we actively annually try to attend to so that we're paving streets where we can, but our existing budget is at about $2.6 million. What we really need is to be putting an additional $3.4 million into that budget to be able to maintain the pavement condition index of 67 that the council has indicated you want us to achieve. We have also a backlog of maintenance in our facilities. We've got old buildings. We've got needs throughout city facilities. Some of the items that we consider facilities are our public trees, for example, our sidewalks, our parks, our open spaces. It's not just our buildings, but all the things that we provide to the public for their use. We can chip away at that backlog, but that takes time. And our fear is that not being able to address the maintenance backlog sufficiently is going to end up in further degradation of some of these assets and also additional costs in the future. And we have a whole slew of master plan and strategic plan documents that we've developed over the years with the input of the public and council concurrence. And we want to be able to implement those plans and the many tasks and sub-projects within those. We also are aware of many of the unfunded needs in the community, such as childcare, affordable childcare programs, affordable housing programs, improvements in Old Town, a whole variety of different improvements there. And then discussions about what level of public safety do we need in our growing community? And also, how do we keep up with the demand for library services? So this is kind of the summary of the things that are above our current service levels that really do need to be addressed. Next slide. This is just another, you know, quick list of how additional revenue could be used if a sales tax measure moves forward and is passed by the voters. Definitely we've seen in the priorities through the public opinion polling and the survey that we need to address homelessness. We need to keep repairing streets and addressing potholes. We're able to, with additional revenue, we would be able to make more of a dent in the issues like affordable childcare and affordable housing. We can certainly go a long way in implementing our master plans like the Creeks and Watershed Management Plan with additional revenues. And really also address the projects in our bicycle and pedestrian master plan. Those are some of the ideas that staff have discussed with you in the past. We thought it would be important just to show those again one more time. But also think about, with the uncertainty we're facing as we come out of the pandemic, is there more we can do for families, for local businesses? You'll recall we put together an economic recovery plan early in the pandemic and funneled many, many dollars to relief programs for local residents and businesses. It's something that we would like council to consider as a potential use for any additional revenues through a sales tax measure. Next slide. And this really just details again the many strategic plans that we have. I haven't named them all, but let us not forget the Butterfly Habitat Management Plan. Yes, we do have grant dollars through the Coastal Conservancy, which is fabulous. That gets us funded through one significant project. We don't have a dedicated funding stream for how to continue to restore that habitat and maintain it. We have our Parks, Facilities, and Playgrounds Master Plan. Many of these items could be funded in part by grants or development impact fees, but we don't have enough to do it all. I touched on homelessness a moment ago. One of our newest strategic plans is the Homelessness Strategic Plan. Council has been able to leverage some of its dollars and work with the county on several exciting initiatives. But long term, we know this is a problem that we'll need to be dealing with, and we don't have a long-term funding source dedicated to those efforts. The Strategic Energy and Climate Action Plan, another really exciting plan. We are moving forward with implementing parts of it, as you can see in our parking lot, as we finish the installation of solar panels and move toward getting those hooked up to City Hall here. But there's a lot of unfunded initiatives and projects in that plan as well. And our community center. We are in the beginning stages of developing a master plan and a strategic planning process for the community center. We're not aware of what the specific items will be coming out of that process, but it's important to know that even as we're looking to implement existing plans, we're still moving forward developing master plans for other critical facilities. And of course, we hear quite frequently from the public about their concerns about Lake Los Caneros and whether the master plan that was created years ago by the county is going to be updated. And the answer is yes, but how are we to fund all of the implementation steps that come out of that? So just some more examples to demonstrate that there's a lot of need for projects for improvements in the community, and we're really just hoping to find solutions on how to fund that need. Next slide. Okay, this is the point where we kind of get into the dollars and cents a bit more, so I'll turn it back to Mr. Rio.
Thank you. Mr. Rio.
Okay, thank you. So what this slide shows is what if Goleta does not address its deferred maintenance? And what's shown here are two different types of graphs, one outlining the cost of continued deferred maintenance and then also the cost of continued deferred CIP. And so what these forecasts include is taking in, assuming the recent inflationary data, but over time smoothing it out over a 10-year average. So that first graph you're seeing is it takes in the assumptions of the $9 million annually that's needed to address ongoing deferred maintenance, and then what is the cost of not addressing it. And again, I wanted to point out, though, you know, the more that you defer the maintenance, you're going to, and the backlog, it will result in increasing costs over time when you do have to address it. Even, you know, more emergency repairs, it can also, you know, instead of being a maintenance item, it's now more of a replacement or a full reconstruction. So that's really what it's highlighted here. So with deferred maintenance, you're looking, you know, at a projected $1.3 million annual average increase, though in the further years, you know, that's where we kind of make this assumption that it's not just maintenance anymore, it's replacement and reconstruction, and then you can see the costs start to escalate about $5.8 million annual increase. And then below with the CIP, so again, this is with reflecting the unfunded portion only, just kind of taking in the California construction cost index over time, so about a $10.3 million annual average increase if you apply that the rate to the total unfunded amount. This next slide highlights our pavement program. This was a graph that was provided in the previous budget workshops. So Goleta will struggle to keep up with its PCI average goal of 67, and roads will continue to deteriorate at a faster pace if additional funding is not made available to address the PCI levels. So what's shown here is basically if we're maintaining it at our current ongoing funding levels, or at the current budget amount, it could potentially drop towards, you know, a PCI level of 50 by fiscal year 30-31. Anything below 55 PCI level is considered to be in poor condition. And again, it may result in costly reconstruction instead of maintenance. So this next slide really just highlights the general fund impacts of deferred maintenance. And what this chart shows is our general fund forecast with our current revenues. But what we've done is we've included the cost of the deferred maintenance. And so what's shown here is an ongoing annual deficit, just basically demonstrating that our current revenue stream is not enough to support the ongoing deferred maintenance. And so what you'll see is there's a average, you know, annual deficit over the five-year term, about $12.1 million. Over the 10 years, it grows exponentially about to $20.7 million. So, you know, that it's just basically demonstrating that we just don't have the, our current revenue streams are not sufficient to support it.
I do have a question from Councilmember Carriaco.
Can you go back one slide? So I'm looking, I'm looking at the pavement index, and I'm thinking back to 2 years ago when our public works director was talking to us. And he framed the choice about investing in our pavement and our roads as basically you can pay now or you can pay a lot later. If I'm looking at this, it looks to me like if we don't do it now, the only real chance that we would have the ability to increase our revenues and address this issue before we'd be dangerously close to 55 would be in 24, 25, 25, 26, right? Looks like right around there is when we start getting dangerously close to 55. So if that's the case, we could potentially kick the can down the road 2 more years. As one of my colleagues said at our last meeting, we don't have a crystal ball. We don't know what the economy will be like in 2 years. So if we don't generate the extra revenue now and say we found ourselves in 2024 in a recessionary environment, I guess I'll ask rhetorically, is it likely that we would put a sales tax on the ballot if there were a recession? So I guess I'll ask somewhat rhetorically, but answer if you feel like you can. Do you feel like this might be our last best opportunity to get ahead of this before our pavement's really at risk? And maybe Charlie needs to answer that.
Madam Mayor, council members, we can ask Mr. Ebeling to pop up. There he is. He can speak to the condition of the pavement and when to act, and then Mr. Rio can talk a little bit about information that he's researched on the current economic situation and what the forecast might look like.
Thank you, Ms. Green. Mayor Prodi, Councilmember Kiriakou, you know, I've thought a lot about how to maybe even potentially add to this graph that we're looking at in the slide. And maybe one way to think about it would be if I could overlay a line graph on top of each one of those colored lines, I would show it as sort of a geometric progression. And as that green line goes down, that geometric progression or that curve up starts to get a lot steeper and a lot scarier. So I would say that we are on that cusp of getting to the point where we're going to be far below our targets with our PCI. But one thing to think about with the PCI is it really is an indicator of the physical reality of what's happening with the roads out there. And the road pavement services, the pavement, is in a very challenging and precarious position where we are getting to the point where other roads, not just Cathedral Oaks, are also approaching that need for reconstructions. And I think that we are kind of at that tipping point, and there's a lead time also. So for Public Works to deliver a significant project when we know we have the funding takes between a year and a year and a half, or even 2 years, sometimes depending on the size of the project. So I would say we are definitely at that precarious position, or have probably already there, where much of the rest of the city will struggle with pavement conditions that are similar to what we've seen in Cathedral Oaks and are trying to catch up on. So I guess my short answer, Councilmember Kiriakou, is that I feel that we're probably already there, that we are at that cusp of needing to address the pavement much sooner than later, or it will start to get, as I said in the past, and you mentioned, very, very expensive.
That's really concerning. Let me just ask you one more question. If you don't have the answer to this, it's okay, because I know you're not an expert in auto repair. But isn't one of the main reasons why you want to keep your pavement well-maintained, not just from the aesthetics, the usability, but also because at a certain point, when your pavement falls into a certain state of disrepair, doesn't that have financial impacts on citizens that drive in terms of the wear and tear on their vehicles, added car repair bills, those things? You know, isn't there a cost to the public of not repairing our pavement that goes beyond just the public works budget? Doesn't this hit our personal budgets too at a certain point?
Mayor Prodi, Councilmember Kiriakou, as a side note, in a previous life, I was a master mechanic, so I do know a little bit about cars.
How convenient. Please opine.
And I would say that's very true in a general sense that the condition of the roads is really important in terms of the public's vehicle fleet. And it will affect cars, their suspensions, the longevity of a car with their things like their shock absorbers or their struts, that kind of thing. So it does have an impact on the public, but it also has an impact from a safety concern where we're looking at that, the surface of the road. And we always want to make sure that the surface of the road is meeting or exceeding engineering standards, and that we take into account the safety of that surface. Believe it or not, we even look at the friction factor of that surface to make sure that, a good example would be to picture a vehicle that's trying to come to a stop on gravel, and they can tend to start sliding if they're if the surface isn't very good. So we want to be really careful to make sure that we're always looking to improve the condition of our roads, make sure we're meeting engineering standards for things like friction factors. And yes, ultimately, there is a cost. It's hard to calculate, but there's definitely a cost to the public with their fleet of vehicles and their maintenance costs. So I think there's it's interesting that pavement isn't just the condition isn't just that we're disturbed when we hit a pothole. There's actually there's that cost to the fleet, but there's also a significant safety concern as we move forward also.
Thank you.
Councilmember Seves, let's go and jump to
Mr. Ebling, the pavement condition and where we're at now is not unique to Goleta, is that correct?
Mayor Prodi, Councilmember Seves, that's true. Many agencies are struggling with meeting their PCIs or their goals for the condition of their pavement.
And our roadways, we inherited. We're 20 years old. We inherited roadways that were created by the county. And what you're finding now, especially with Cathedral Oaks, is many of the roadways were poorly constructed. Is that right?
Mayor Prodi, Councilmember Seves, that's true. And I would add that it's interesting in the greater Goleta, Carpinteria, Santa Barbara area that many of the roadways in the suburbs of this area were created at about the same time in the early 60s to the mid 1970s. And it creates an unfortunate aspect that most of the roadways in this area, and this really also applies to Goleta in particular, that the roadways are aging at about the same time. We don't have we don't have a whole bunch of roadways aging at different intervals. They're all kind of hitting the same age at the same time because they were all really they were constructed at the same time in the 60s and 70s.
Now, just two real brief questions. I want us to move on. The issue of PCI is not new to the many councils that have served Goleta. This is something we've been talking about every budget year. And it's a question of the budget years, whether they're priorities among everything else or not. So my other question is, if you had the ability to bring us up to the maintain level, what would that cost?
Mayor Prodi, Councilmember Seves, as the graph shows, we would likely be in the $6 million range per year. And we'd also have to look at that every year. My estimation would be that over time that could actually increase, not only because of the condition of the pavement, but also construction costs. So I think It would be safe to say that those costs would exceed a $6 million per year and likely be closer to 8 or 10.
Okay, and today we're talking about how to use a sales tax, which of course I don't support, but the sales tax is estimated at $10 million because of inflation. Mr. Rio, without inflation, what would that number look like?
The original estimate was around 9 million.
Okay, of the 9, 6 million just to make the roadways at a maintain or safe level. Is that what I'm hearing?
Keep in mind, Madam Mayor, council members, that we do have the ability to use gas tax and SP1 funds toward pavement, and also in some cases some Measure A funding. So I, you know, it's a policy question for council whether you want to use just general fund money or a combination of general fund and other special funds.
The maybe better asked is, what is the unfunded number to get us to where we need to be without using all the funds you just talked about?
So that's probably something we'll have to look further into, but I know we commit right now $2.5 million in total funding. Out of the general fund right now, we do meet the required maintenance of effort to satisfy the SB1 road maintenance, gas tax, the additional gas tax. So that's about $750,000 annually from the general fund right now, with the rest being offset by gas tax, Measure A, and SB1 funding.
I will add that we had identified approximately $3.3 million needed annually to supplement the special funds and the existing general fund investment that we make into payment.
Okay, thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Kasdan.
Yeah, let me follow up on that question. So it was a big increase, as I recall, when we added this year to get to the 3.3. What do you, could you give a sense of what historically the amount has been over the past, over the city's lifetime, more or less, that we've invested in the pavement program to maintain or not the pavement condition index?
So I don't have that information in front of me, but if I recall, the way we've funded pavement over time was, it was kind of, we would defer the funding and carry it over for the next project. So there would be, you know, carryover budget that would allow, you know, for a larger pavement project to be done. But I'd have to look further into that and get back to you.
Well, I guess one question is, you know, some people have suggested that we are, should be able to live within our means, that we, that what we're proposing now is just sort of extras or unnecessary spending or something like that, that there's no rationale for the sales tax, that because we've been getting by as we are. And if, I guess in this particular case, if we've been getting by in part by deferring or not fully funding the PCI needs, does that seem accurate based on our previous spending levels and the need and the amount we should have been spending to maintain a PCI of 67, let's say? Or have our roads been deteriorating significantly over time because we've not been maintaining an adequate spending level on pavement?
Maybe that's a Mr. Ebling question.
Mayor Prodi, Mayor Pro Tem Kasdan, I think being still relatively new in my tenure with the city, I can only give you my impression that I think over time, the city likely was underfunding the pavement maintenance program, and there was the deferrals. I think that my impression is that that also occurred not just because of maybe not really recognizing the amount of investment that was needed, but also, as we've talked a lot about a lot, just the ability of the Department of Public Works to deliver projects. And so, as Mr. Rio mentioned, There was often years where a pavement maintenance project was not delivered, and then the funding was carried over to the next fiscal year and a larger project was able to be delivered. That is something where there's a mix of probably underfunding the pavement maintenance program over time. And hence we see that green line that's in the graph of how the city's pavement condition index has been declining. And then at the same time, there's been a struggle for Public Works to be able to deliver a yearly project.
An additional question, as what percent of Goleta roads are now either fair, in which case they're vulnerable to degradation, rapid degradation, poor, or failed right now?
Mayor Pro Tem Kasdan, I would have to take a look at exactly where we are with actual exact percentages. We are in the process of updating our pavement maintenance program, the study that we do to determine the PCI, and that will be coming soon. So I can't honestly tell you off the top of my head what percentage is, although I think just anecdotally, you can see that the roads are, many of the roads in neighborhoods as well as our arterials are starting to decline and get into the lower PCI range.
Well, actually, I think the beginning of the report said 2/3, if I recall.
Okay.
So
I'm hesitant to report it just because I know we're doing the study again.
Okay. And so it's 2/3 of the roads are either vulnerable to degradation or are already in a state of degradation and need additional repairs to avoid further decline. And that produces this massive backlog of additional expenses and so forth. So, okay. I think those are my questions for right now. Thank you.
Councilmember Richards.
Thank you. I know a lot of my questions have been answered already, so I appreciate the comments that were made and the questions that were brought up. I just want to point out, you know, the PCI, this is a term that we throw around a lot, and just so that everyone's clear, it's the pavement condition index, and it's really just a way to quantify what it is that we're all feeling, you know, in our daily life as we navigate around the city and we walk and bike and drive on our streets, that, you know, it's the way of coming up with a number and giving us a grade or a report card on what that is. And we're barely maintaining, and I think it could be argued, and I think, I guess one question is, what's the most recent PCI that we have, and are we in the middle of doing a study, and when will those results be available? Mr. Abbott?
Mayor Perotti, Councilmember Richards, we are in the middle of a study, and we're just a handful of months away from completing the study. And the last time the study was completed was 3 years ago. And I would point out that we are essentially on that green line in the graph. So we are slowly but surely, our PCI is slowly but surely declining with the amount of current investment.
Okay, thank you. You know, and that actually, to me, brings into question the idea that we say that we have a structurally balanced budget, because in one sense, we're balancing our budget on the backs of continuing a large log of unfunded deferred maintenance that, you know, if it were structurally sound, I would argue that we would be maintaining our current PCI, that would be, you know, at least we're maintaining our current levels of service, we're maintaining our current levels of what we have. We're not. It doesn't appear that we are, and I have a feeling that when we find out what the results of this new PCI are, it's going to show that it's gone down. We feel that. The city, you know, that's one of the things that we hear from our residents about, is what's going on. And I want to point out that, you know, we've gotten a lot of positive feedback regarding the work that's been done in the current program, especially on Cathedral Oaks and some of the work that's been done on Kellogg and Old Town and other places around the city, and more is on its way. We're not done with this year's program yet. But that was only done because we added $3.3 million to this year's budget. That wasn't the original allocation that we started with. We were able to take some of our unfunded general funds that we hadn't used elsewhere and apply it to this. So if we were really sticking within the budget and sticking with what we had originally allocated, we wouldn't see all the work that we're seeing done around right now. And so I would just say that, you know, we are in great need, and I'm glad that Councilman Kiriakou said it. You know, we either pay now or we pay a lot more later. And so the bill will only continue to increase. The conditions will only get worse. And yeah, maybe this is the result of poor conditions of roads that we inherited from the county. That may be. We've had this for 20 years now. So this isn't a new issue. This is a known problem. It's been identified. We need to find ways to address it. We need to find the funds to do it. And if we don't do it, then it's only going to get worse. So I would really like to hear, you know, where those extra funds should come from and what we would have to cut in order to maintain our roads appropriately. But it's not going to happen at the level that we've budgeted for. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, my questions have been asked, but I just will make a quick comment that when I started in 2010, the conversation has always been, ever since, it's always been about our infrastructure. And I remember our average PCI was 70 or higher. I remember it was really important. And then we came down to 67. So I guess my question would be, would there be some, not that I'm advocating for going lower than 67, I think that was a hard one for us to decide on. But you know, if it's not funded, if we don't have the funding, would we then be put in a position? Maybe the study would show us that maybe it should be 65 because that's all you can afford, or 60. That's just because that's your goal because that's what you can afford. I would hate to see that happen, but. Mr. Ebling, is that even a consideration? I know that would probably be a policy call, but would that even be mentioned in the report?
Mayor Prodi, I think one of the ways to think about this isn't just to look at that number as say an acceptable quality of the pavement condition. I think that the number's more significant than that what it really means is that you're looking for a sweet spot of how you're investing in that asset, in that pavement condition. When the number tends to go below the sweet spot, what's happening is you're essentially deferring maintenance, and that eventually that number will not only decline, but the cost will start to have that geometric progression that we've talked about, where the cost will start to be more. So if it the number isn't just that we're saying that's a quality that we're willing to accept. The number is really much more about that this is looking for that sweet spot, that we're investing correctly in the maintenance so that we're not spending too much trying to make gold-plated roads, but at the other end of the spectrum, not spending too little so that we're heading off into having to defer maintenance and then spend a lot more later. And I think that, I think the number isn't just that quality, it's a lot more than that.
Thank you for explaining that and educating me on that. Thank you, I appreciate it. I'm not seeing any more questions, so maybe we can continue.
Certainly, we will do that. We're going to speed up a little bit because we really want to get to the crux
and
of
we haven't gotten to the
whole workshop.
Yet.
Okay. Mr. Rio, you had one more thing to cover on this slide, I believe, right?
I just wanted to point out that, again, Goleta cannot afford the deferred maintenance without additional revenue sources. And I did want to point out, too, though, should there be another unanticipated emergency repair, such as like the Cathedral Oaks Crib Wall Repair Project, that's another risk we do face. But however, you know, we do have a contingency reserve, but again, that in the event of emergency, and we do have access to lines of credit and reduce service levels permanently if we need to afford debt service for an emergency repair.
Council Member, or Mayor Pro Tem Kasdan.
Yeah, just a quick question. So in the deferred maintenance, that net operating with deferred maintenance, is that just, what's included in that? Does that include things like Cathedral Oaks Cribwall and projects of that sort? Does that include the community center and maintaining? What is incorporated in that, in those numbers?
So that's purely ongoing deferred maintenance estimates that was that we have, that includes your pavement backlog, your ongoing concrete repair, your public backlog of public tree maintenance, traffic signals, storm drain maintenance. So this number does not include capital improvement program or one-time CIP projects. It's purely the deferred maintenance.
Okay, so where they've gone, in other words, where its projects have gone sort of further down the road and now need a bigger investment than just maintenance, but like the crib wall, where now we need a major investment because we haven't kept it up, that wouldn't be included here.
Right. This is the cost of doing nothing, basically. We estimated $9 million initial in the first year, but if you continue to defer it, the cost will increase over time.
And this doesn't include facilities? Like a community center, Stowe House, et cetera?
It does include facility maintenance. So your normal reoccurring expenditures for maintenance items, but not specifically to the community center. Any one-time large CIP or capital improvement, it does not include that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so to start to wrap up our presentation, we have on the screen here the sample ballot language. For just to remind everyone, we've updated the amount here to indicate the 10.6 million. That's what our current projections are telling us. So next slide. And just a reminder, we're talking about a general purpose tax. We have some information about what is required in voter support. And it's a simple majority and not a two-thirds. But the important thing about a general tax is you can't formally commit it to certain expenditures. That's not what we're trying to do here today. We're trying to have council engage in a discussion about priorities in the event that there is additional revenue. So I don't want anyone to think that we're making a formal commitment here. This is really just priority setting. Next slide. And Mr. Rio is going to take it from here.
So we're now getting into the draft spending plan. And so council may wish to approve a draft plan on how to allocate the potential new sales tax revenue. Funds will go to the highest priority projects and purposes. And instead of backlog of unfunded capital projects and the strategic plans, you will see progress and the public can see progress and accomplishments. And then the plan really will, be finalized and approved through the budget process. So with that, I'm actually going to transition here to the spreadsheet. So if you give me a couple of seconds.
And while Mr. Rio does that, I'll just mention that we did send out a worksheet individually to council members so that they could think about whether they wanted to rank any of the projects and programs in priority order ahead of this discussion. We did receive input from two council members, so we've updated the worksheet slide here to reflect that input, but certainly, we're happy to get any input from any council member at this point, and we're happy to also pause if you would like to take public comment.
I think this is be an excellent time to take public comment.
If there are any members of the public wishing to speak, please use the raise hand feature and I will call on you. I do see several hand raised, about four at this moment. Our first speaker is Michael Iza. If you can please unmute yourself.
Hello, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. First of all, I want to thank the council for bringing this up. And I want to say I do support this tax measure. It's clearly important and needed. So what I wanted to do, talk about today is give you, help you give my feedback on how these revenues should be used. It's pretty clear from what we're hearing from Public Works and the city in general that repavement is very important. And I would add that you can accomplish a couple of things if you prioritize repavement of streets. One is, right, you repave a street, which makes it last longer, but you're also given the ability to restripe the street in order to make it meet the needs of the bicycle and pedestrian master plan. And I think, you know, there's been some positive feedback from the community on what happened in Cathedral Oaks. And I think part of a large part of that is due to the restriping that was done in order to create a buffer between the bicyclists and the road users. So I think you can do two things by prioritizing the repavement project. The second priority I'd like to, in my mind, is creek and watershed management, and that includes Elwood, right? A few years ago now, it was clear that there was really no plan in place to take care of the Elwood Preserve. And the council had to authorize the cutting of trees, which the community really did not want. And because that clearly showed that there was really no real management going on at Elwood. So I think those funds would be really important to use in order to actually have a plan for Elwood. And I do want to address one issue that was brought up by the surveys. And it was clear that a lot of people responded with health and public safety as a top priority. And what I would like to emphasize to the council is these results indicate that there's a need for safety, right? But that I would urge the council that this does not mean hiring more police officers. I would urge them not to have the knee-jerk reaction of, oh, safety means police officers. So I would like to instead urge the council to prioritize the social and health needs of the community in order to address what the majority of 911 calls involve, right? And so,
Mr. Issa, your time is up.
Okay, sorry, my computer doesn't show when it's
okay. No problem. Thank you for your comments. Thank you.
Our next speaker is Brian Trotwine. If you can please unmute yourself.
Good morning, Mayor Perotti and council members. I'm Brian Trotwine, EDC's Watershed Program Director. Goleta's creeks and watersheds are vitally important to our community. They recharge our aquifers, act as natural filters to clean coastal water, provide habitat for fish and wildlife, including rare species, offer recreational opportunity, including trails and outdoor labs for students, nature appreciation and quiet areas for respite. 92% of Goleta residents prioritize creeks, according to the recent survey. Surveys for the Creek and Watershed Management Plan show that 85% think creeks are important as habitat. 23 nonprofits supported the Creek and Watershed Management Plan when it was adopted unanimously. The city made a significant investment for CWMP in 2020. However, the city lacks funding to implement it. Goleta sales tax is currently 1% or more less than most other local cities. The measure would raise over $10 million per year, and this could be a funding source to implement the CWMP. EDC recommends that 20% of the increased sales tax revenue be allocated to the CWMP, so that the city and community groups can work together to clean up and restore local creeks. The City of Santa Barbara's Creek program receives over $2 million per year from the transient occupancy tax. Although Santa Barbara has only three major creeks, Goleta has 12 creeks. There are significant grants available for creeks, but these grants require matching funds. The sales tax revenue could act as a matching fund for grants to protect our treasured creeks. Local contractors could be hired to restore our creeks, and it would enhance Goleta's economy through ecotourism. Investing in creeks is investing in the city, and it will be good for the environment, for the economy, and for the quality of life. EDC's Watershed Alliance hosts 20 groups. In 2000, these groups promoted Measure B, which created the City of Santa Barbara's Creeks Program. You've heard from several of these groups already that they want the city to prioritize, and these groups can help promote the sales tax measure if the city prioritizes creeks. Seven of the 12 public comments in the record support funding creeks. Prioritizing creeks is good for our community, for city residents, and for our quality of life. Please prioritize watersheds with sales tax revenue. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our next speaker is George Rellis. If you can please unmute yourself.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Of course, I support many of the worthy projects that have been mentioned, particularly the creeks and maintenance, and particularly roads. And I agree with Mr. Itza that roads are an opportunity to work on bikes. I do think something has been overlooked, particularly in your maintenance section, and we're lucky to have Director Ebeling here. Throughout Goleta, we have trees that have uprooted sidewalks, sometimes 6 inches or more. And my understanding is that to fix a sidewalk, you want to get rid of the tree probably, and then you want to replace the tree because of climate change. And that enterprise per tree, I think, is in the thousands of dollars. I'd like you to ask Director Ebeling if that, if we've done a sidewalk slash tree survey, and what the total cost of that would be. My notion is it's about $15,000 a tree, and we have hundreds of trees. Strategic, we need to get more people walking, a lot of people with disabilities, children on tricycles. The sidewalks are unsafe for that. It's a major need. It's one of the most basic things that a city provides. You're all to be complimented for the complete sidewalk project that you did in Old Town. But meanwhile, there are, because of the liquid amber trees primarily, there are hundreds of uprooted sidewalks, literally uprooted. And so key thing I'm asking is let's not ignore the need to do the most basic thing government does, which is keep the sidewalks fixed. And let's make sure that that number is baked into the maintenance number, because I think the maintenance number does not account for that. I'd like to know, and I think you would too. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you.
Our next speaker is Ken Owen. If you can please unmute yourself.
Yeah, good morning, Mayor and members of the Goleta City Council. I'm Ken Owen, Executive Director of Channel Islands Restoration. I want to first off associate myself with what Brian Troutwine said, so I won't repeat that. But CIR is a nonprofit organization that provides habitat restoration services and environmental education, and we've really had the privilege over the last 20 years of working in a lot of the watersheds in Goleta. I know firsthand what kind of a resource they are. They're really a wonderful resource. They provide all kinds of benefits to the public, as Brian said, and also, of course, important habitat for important wildlife. I do know a lot about what the hotel occupancy tax did in the city of Santa Barbara. It really transformed our the creeks remarkably. There were, prior to that funding, they were cesspools in places, literally. A massive amount of pollution, the trash would wash into the ocean every time it rained, and a major fire hazard. All kinds of issues were literally cleaned up with that funding. So I believe this is an opportunity for Goleta to do the same thing in its wonderful watersheds. So I'm really here to urge you folks to support the sales tax increase and applying that to the creeks, because it's really going to be a substantial measure for the council to provide, and for the citizens of Goleta to provide, to actually be a part of the solution for our environmental problems. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next speaker is Aaron Kreisberg. If you can please unmute yourself.
Hello, you got me okay?
Yes, we can.
Well, good morning. Thank you for the opportunity to provide comment. I just wanted to echo what a lot of the other public commenters said. I want to support the funding of the Creeks and Watershed Management Plan. I got to be associated with that process at a couple points and saw how much effort went into it. So it would be a shame to have that whole process and then to not support it down the line. I've been out on a lot of the creeks recently and gotten to see how much opportunity there is out there for restoration and habitat enhancement. And then in addition to the Creeks and Watershed Management Plan, I would also echo the comments regarding Elwood, the habitat management plan out there, and the Lake Pernarth Master Plan. I'm familiar with that document and aware of how in need of updating it is. So I would support funding for the Lake Los Pernarth Management Plan and producing a plan that prioritizes habitat and preservation out there at Lake Los Pernarth. And then lastly, then just the section 5 in the document, the general backlog on open space maintenance and funding for the parks, or funding going towards public-private partnership to facilitate management of open space. And yeah, thank you for the opportunity to comment, and definitely appreciate any funding towards those things. As we've heard, there's a lot of things that need support, including pavement and outlet services, but definitely wanted to speak to the Creeks and Watershed Management Plan. So thank you.
Thank you.
And our next speaker is Eddie Harris. If you can please unmute yourself. Mr. Harris, are you there?
Good morning, Mayor and members of the City Council. My name is Eddie Harris. I'm speaking on behalf the Santa Barbara Urban Creeks Council today. I want to thank you for the opportunity to participate in this workshop. Santa Barbara Urban Creeks Council has a long, over 33-year history of protecting and cleaning and restoring creeks in the Goleta's watersheds. And I'm speaking for our many members and families who prize the natural environment of Goleta and who hold protection of local creeks as a top priority, even according to your own surveys. The recently adopted Creek and Watershed Management Plan, adopted unanimously by the council in 2020, remains unfunded despite wide support by city residents. To be successful, the CWMP must be funded in a way that is similar to the City of Santa Barbara's Creeks program. So I'm urging that you prioritize the funding of creek protection and Creek and Watershed Management Plan recommendations in the ballot proposal for city voters. Thanks for taking my input, and please ensure that essential creek and watershed protections are prioritized. This is one of the best investments that the city and residents can make for ongoing natural resources, clean water, and benefits that are prized by all people who live in Goleta. Thank you.
Thank you.
There are any other members of the public who wish to speak, please use the raise hand feature and I will call on you. I do not see any additional responses.
Thank you so much. Mayor Pro Tem Kasdan, you have a question?
Yeah. So the first question I had was the there were certain items that were called for in the general plan. They had action items. And some of the strategic plans that we have were specifically called out for us to implement. I believe Creek and Watershed Water Management Plan is one such plan. But which plans are identified in the general plan?
Madam Mayor, council members, in anticipation of a question like that coming up, we did start some initial research. Unfortunately, our planning director is on vacation, or I would have him address that. However, Ms. Schmidt, who is joining us virtually, has looked into that with our analyst, Shannon Kern. So if we could bring Ms. Schmidt over as a panelist, then she can start to address that. There she is.
Hi. Mayor Perotti, Mayor Pro Tem Kasdan, we did go back and look, and it's interesting, many of the things on our list of priorities are mentioned in the general plan. The city pavement program and capital improvement programs are part of the capital improvements program and budget priority that was set. We also have for Old Town, there's discussion about the parking in lieu fee program there. The Santa Jose Creek flood control project was mentioned in the general plan. So some things in Old Town. Affordable housing is mentioned, monitoring and preserving assisted affordable housing units, and then economic development. There's a link to housing and jobs mentioned in the general plan. Yes, there is the Creek and Watershed Management Plan implementation or management plan is specifically mentioned in the general plan, as is the bicycle and pedestrian master plan implementation. There is also park and development management plans that were mentioned. So that would cover sort of the Elwood Mesa, Lake Los Carneros, and our parks facilities and playground master plan. Some of those in there. And then we do have a preparation of a greenhouse gas reduction plan. So the strategic energy and climate plan is referenced there, but really a lot of the priorities that we have were specifically mentioned in the general plan.
So would it be fair to say that things that were identified as priority items or action items in the general plan that we have not implemented, wouldn't it be fair to say that we are failing to accomplish the general plan's goals, that these are not just sort of supplemental or wish list kind of things, but are essential to what the city was supposed to be doing?
Madam Mayor and Mayor Pro Tem, I think that is a fair statement. I think we have been diligent in pursuing the creation and adoption of those plans, but where we're falling short is in the implementation of all of the tasks within those plans due to the lack of funding to not only provide for our day-to-day operations, but to go above and beyond that and address some of the one-time and ongoing needs identified in those plans.
And so, well, let me ask you another related question. What did some of those cost? So we found it a priority. The general plan identified some of these things, and we said, yes, it is our responsibility to pursue these. What did a Creek and Watershed Plan cost to develop? What did the economic development plan that we're working on now, what does that cost? Any a bike and ped, if you can remember offhand?
Unfortunately, I can't remember offhand all of those, but I think it's safe to say that those costs aggregated have been millions of dollars, because, you know, we're talking about projects that needed not only staff support, but consultant services, and spanned several years in many cases. Very thorough and significant public processes happened as a result of the creation of those plans. So when you pool them all together, we've spent many, many, I would say more than hundreds of thousands, but into the millions for all of those together.
It would seem kind of a waste to spend all that money to develop the plans and not have the funding to actually implement them.
Yeah.
One other thing that I thought I was curious about, if for Director Ebling, if we have some sense, particularly Bike and Ped and some of the CIP projects, if we can have some sense of what sort of performance measures there might be in terms of safety impacts. Are there estimates that if we haven't been able to do these Bike and Ped ones? I remember in the recent CIP workshop, there was a long list of Bike and Ped master plan projects that you identified, these are great, can't do it. So if we were able to do those and any other CIP ones that are high priority that we haven't been able to initiate, is there some estimate of lives saved, accidents avoided, something like that that would indicate if we did this, here's the impacts to the community in terms of our investment?
Mayor Perotti, Mayor Pro Tem Kasdan, I don't know of a performance measure sort of in that spirit. I would say that in general, I always like to let everybody know that the roads and bike paths and city facilities in the city of Goleta are very safe. They, at the same time, we always are looking for ways to improve safety. So I look at it like, how can we improve the safety? How can we improve the quality of life? Many of those items, those policy decisions are included in the master plans, for example, the bicycle and pedestrian master plan. And I think if there were to be a performance measure, for example, it might be something like, considering how much of a master plan we've implemented. But in terms of actual lives saved or collisions reduced, that's not really data that we look at or a way we have followed it. And most agencies don't really look at it that way. We're more looking at it like, how can we improve safety? How can we improve the quality of life? And perhaps the best way to think about that is how we would look at performance measures in terms of implementing some of our master plans.
Well, I can say that if this were a federal program, we would have goals of that sort, because when we implement, let's say, safe routes to schools, when we implement the bike and ped things to help kids get to school, we're doing it to ensure or help provide a safer environment for them. And our goal is safety, not just production of master plans. But I understand it's a challenging thing to try and estimate, so I don't want to overdo. One last question, and I'm sorry to take up. The fire risk and a lot of the things that the public is concerned with is the tree trimmings that are on Elwood Mesa and other areas, and perhaps the homeless changing the encampments and moving encampments out of these fire risk environments. How will we be able to reduce fire risk and make the community safer with more funds available of this sort?
Madam Mayor, Council Members, and Mayor Pro Tem, if we could take a moment for two of our staff members to address that. I think it's a double-sided question. So first, if we could start with Mr. Thompson and then have Mr. Valdez speak to the homelessness portion.
Great, thank you, Madam Mayor and Mayor Pro Tem Kasdan. So not just at Elwood, but across our open spaces, we've got over 30 parks and open spaces
all of them have trees, but obviously the most visually impacted area is Elwood. It took the city from 2011 to 2019 to figure out what to do in a general sense at Elwood. And I'll just paraphrase here, but basically bring on the experts, not impact butterfly habitat. And now we're in the initial phase of really the detailed plan. So what we're trying to do right now is a heavy lift, removing as much of the dead downed eucalyptus that we have out at Elwood in a way that does not disturb our recovering butterfly population. So that's going to be the big first initial effort. But remember, we have thousands of trees out there. And so this is not a one-time effort. This is annually going out, doing tree removals, tree pruning, tree plantings. And so that's where we are right now. One of the public speakers also mentioned our street tree program. That is another big opportunity and liability for the city. We do have a lot of dead dying trees in our street parkways that need to be replanted. And again, that's not a one-time effort. That's planting, watering, care, annual trimming, and so on. So back to Elwood, we are reaching out to complete our permitting process and then lining up our contracts with a number of contractors and state agencies. Just to give you a dollar figure, each eucalyptus costs about $2,500 to $5,000 to remove a dead eucalyptus. So that just gives you a sense of the scale.
Good afternoon, Madam Mayor, members of the council. For the homeless side, in terms of the response to, fire risk and those types of items, we've seen a dedication of resources by City Council that's been fairly strong in the last year and a half. Part of the issue that's being seen across the county is not so much limited to the outreach services, but also to the actual provision of housing units. And so while we have some momentum with the Super 8 project, longer term, there's going to be more needs and a way to try to get those populations down, and the only way to do that is create more housing. And we're looking at multiple types of projects that could be done. We'll be looking at the Homeless Issues Committee to bounce some of those ideas around, but some of those you may have seen in the news, Dignity Moves, you've seen some other attempts, but those are not cheap by any stretch of the imagination. They're can be seen as worthwhile investments, but they are not something that we have a lot of additional money just kind of hanging around for that purpose. And that's why part of it is looking at the homelessness strategic plan is to see where those impacts can be made quickly and hopefully with the most amount of efficacy.
Thank you.
Councilmember Carriacro.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Mayor Pro Tem Kasdan came dangerously close to my question with his last question. I just want to follow up on one point. It's true that fire safety has a component to it that relates to the homeless encampments. And it's true that there's an element of fire safety that pertains to whether or not we're taking care of dead brush and trimming our trees properly. But isn't there a much larger component to this also related to our watersheds, particularly riparian health? We have 100-foot setbacks in Goleta for a reason when it comes to our streamside protection areas. One of those reasons is public safety. Can you just talk a little bit about the correlation between having healthy riparian plants with a high water content and fire breaks?
Madam Mayor and Councilmember Kiriakou, that's absolutely correct. So in riparian areas, they typically have more access to groundwater, higher level of leaf moisture. For our open areas, open spaces, particularly north of Cathedral Oaks, and we have quite a few that I think most members of our community don't visit. They're not really developed for public access, but these are places like upper part of Stowe Canyon, La Goleta open space, Oro Verde, and then we have other areas closer to 101, like the back part of Winchester 1. In a lot of these riparian areas, we have large eucalyptus that are either dead, down, dying. And so it's a two-step process. Remove the really flammable portion and then restore it with sycamores, coastline oak, fire-resistant shrubs, willows that can really draw up the water and create a better fire break. And then the last part is doing the annual maintenance. So not just doing the planting, but coming in with some of the tools that we have in our toolbox, such as grazers, sheep, goats, hand crews. So it is an ongoing commitment that currently we really don't have the funding to perform.
So investing in our watersheds is an investment in fire hazard mitigation. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Councilor Richards.
Thank you. Yeah, I wanted to make a comment with regard to these community strategic plans. And, you know, I think one thing that the city has done very well, at least over the last 5 years at least, is that we have put a great deal of thought and outreach and education and really collected a lot of input from the public and engaged the public and experts into a number of different plans, you know, and we've talked about the homelessness strategic plan, the pedestrian, bicycle pedestrian plan, creeks and watershed management plan. We're about to embark on an update of our economic development strategic plan. And one of the things that always comes up, during these conversations is to what extent are these plans just gonna be left on the shelf? Are these going to be living documents? Are we really going to implement this? We hope, and I remember, you know, having this discussion before. I sure hope that this isn't one of those plans that we just put on the shelf and that we never get to, that is, you know, just collects dust until we update the plan, you know, or that so much time has gone by that the plan is no longer relevant, so we need to revise it. But, you know, there really is an amount of public trust that we have to think about, that by going through all the effort, and as was mentioned, you know, putting in resources, you know, these plans cost tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars each one. And that is an investment. These are expensive plans because they are, I believe, done so well. I believe that we have done a great job of really collecting the information and synthesizing it and coming up with a real thoughtful way of how we want to proceed, you know. And I should mention, too, that these plans in themselves, I believe, represent the priorities of the city council, and I also believe that they represent the priorities of our public and our community. You know, each of these plans and each one has involved a great number of people in the public, and we, for all of the workshops that we have, we always get a great deal of interest and people coming out because they want to be engaged. They want to be a part of that process. And I'm concerned that by having, you know, these plans and going through that effort, and if we don't follow through and we don't implement them, that it really is a loss of public trust. And so I think for that reason, I really do want to support as a priority for today's activity that making sure that we have the appropriate budget for these plans so that we can really implement them in a way that makes sense because we've already put so much thought and work into them. So I want to make sure that is a priority for today. I have some other priorities as well, and I think we already talked about pavement, and that's a priority. But I realize that we're at our time is running out, and I don't think we really actually got into the meat of today, so I'll keep my comments at that. Thank you.
You know, I want to be respectful of everyone's time, but we could continue the discussion, go on, or we could bring this, continue it next week. That's kind of up to council. You're fine with continuing? Councilmember Seves, I see your hand up.
Yeah, I don't see continuing what we're doing here. I think it's got to be molded into the budget process. You know, today's hearing was to have a workshop on the enhanced sales tax measure. And one, that's assuming the sales tax is going to pass. And two, we have a list of infrastructure needs we know exist, but there are things that are missing here, like taking care of our internal infrastructure. What about our pension set aside? that we just started to make sure that we don't have those kind of liabilities going into the future, not on the list. You know, every 2 years we go through a very involved budget process. And that budget process is the goal of the city council. And it's up to the city council then to make sure that we hold staff accountable to reaching the goals. That also means that the goals are reasonable, goals that we can financially attain. But quite frankly, we haven't been very good about it. So I hope we start the process next week to finalize the budget, bring this back, and one, assume that the sales tax is not part of the budget. If it is, then you have, if it does get passed, then we can have that discussion another time. You know, one of the things, and just finish with this real quick, one of the things we keep talking about is providing affordable housing. And I just ask you to look at Old Town. Right now, the apartments are going for $2,000 to $3,000. And people are running out their apartment, their bedrooms, their living rooms, just to make the rent payments. So when we talk about affordable housing, let's think about those that can barely afford to live in this community. And then those that are watching us, think about those that can't afford what they're doing now, but yet we want to add a sales tax. But we'll have that discussion next week when we have the final vote on the sales tax. But unfortunately, we didn't address this as planned. I would be in favor, like I said, of blending it into next week's budget hearing.
You know, I just want to comment on your remark, Councilmember Seves. The way I looked at today, and that's the one reason why I didn't rank anything, I felt it was really important to hear from the community and what was important to them. Should a sales tax move forward and should it pass? That was the discussion to have today. And unfortunately, we haven't gotten through the whole list. Maybe we could have planned a little bit more time. And we did hear, and I thank all the public speakers that spoke today. I really appreciate hearing from them. I would have liked to hear from more, to be honest. So, moving forward, it's worthy, definitely worthy of more of a discussion, because the discussion on this topic is mainly what are the priorities of the community and council if we have a sales tax on the ballot and it passes, it's approved. I haven't heard from other council members. If you want to continue this, go on.
Madam Mayor, while they're collecting their comments, I'll just note that staff is able to continue this discussion next Tuesday at our regular council meeting. We're discussing the budget at that time, as well as a potential sales tax measure. So it fits well into what we've planned for that agenda. If you want to continue this discussion to that meeting.
So the public then would have another opportunity to weigh in.
Yes, they have two opportunities.
We have time for to put this. I don't know what else is on the budget. On the agenda for next week yet.
We can accommodate it.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Councilmember Carriaco.
I just want to briefly respond to something I heard earlier because Old Town was specifically mentioned. And I happen to live there. The people that are living in Old Town that are having to spend $2,000, $3,000 a month for housing, they also deserve to have pavement that works, parking that works, sidewalk that works, public safety that works. And I would argue that particularly in the most historically underrepresented and sometimes historically excluded community, perhaps on the entire South Coast, they are more sensitive to bad pavement than anybody else, probably driving older cars where the maintenance really hurts, where an unexpected repair bill really hurts. So I just have to acknowledge that. And then just to address something else that was brought up earlier, it's been said that we need $3.3 million to be able to get caught up on an annual basis with our pavement program. setting aside for the moment the question about whether or not we would accomplish that through the sales tax, I would ask any council member that wants to respond or any staff member that wants to respond, is there $3.3 million that we could find under the mattress somewhere? And particularly for council, because this is a budget priority item and the budget was referenced, what is the thing that you would cut to get that $3.3 million for pavement? Because I would love to have a discussion about that.
Mayor Pro Tem Kasdan?
Thank you. So I thought, well, two things. One, I think the idea of continuing it to the budget workshop is appropriate because how do we go forward from here is not clear. I just wanted to mention that, though, Councilmember Aceves said there's a real need for more spending for affordable housing, but do it somehow without invoking a sales tax. I wasn't clear how that was supposed to work, how we were supposed to accomplish these various things that we identified at various times, whether it's and voted for, whether it's the Creek and Watershed Plan, the Bike and Pedestrian Plan, Lake Los Carneros, all these things that we think are critical things, but we aren't going to look for the funding in order to be able to implement them. So, I thought you made a good observation as to why we should do the sales tax. Anyway, I think we can take it up, and I think that's a reasonable approach.
Councilmember Seves?
Yeah, I'd like to respond to the two comments. First of all, my comment on affordable housing has to do with the fact that they can barely make ends meet, if they can, with what they have now and having to rent out apartments. The sales tax has nothing to do to help them. I don't think improving the roadway is going to help them pay their rent or maybe fix their cars. Who knows? But I think that's not the issue here. The issue here is that people cannot afford additional expenditures. We say food is not taxed, but it is. It's taxed for delivery. And then if you go to eat in a restaurant, guess what? You pay a tax. You drive through McDonald's, guess what? You pay a tax. So we are increasing the food costs. Now, with regards to the comment that Councilman Kyriakos made, I'm not exactly sure how I want to respond to that. The bottom line is, I'll let it go at that. It's getting a little too bifurcated here as far as we're talking about a sales tax, but we're not talking about the priorities of expenditures. Here's the answer to your question. 2008, we went through a recession, and this council had very difficult decisions to make. We eliminated 7 city positions. We eliminate 2 sheriff's positions, and then we basically cut our expenditures dramatically, just to survive the recession. So yes, council made hard decisions during hard times, but they weren't easy. They were not easy decisions. Now we have full staff, well, we're hiring full staffing. Of the deputy positions we eliminated, we returned one of them, and that was a motor officer. The other one, the investigative division detective, was never returned. So when it comes time to being fiscally reactive to the financial situations, we've stepped up and done it. And it's not, and we did it without having to impose additional taxes. So that was my response to
you. You know, I want to bring this back to what this meeting was supposed to be about. And we kind of got a little bit off topic. It was about our priorities, not debating whether we should or shouldn't have a tax initiative put on the. It was about the priorities. If it should go on and it should be approved, then we had heard from the public and the council on their priorities. So with that, I'm going to adjourn this meeting, and we'll come back next week. We'll be discussing this. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, staff, so much for all your input, and thank you, Ms. Green and Mr. Rio, and thank you.